Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is State Senator John DeFrancisco. He represents the 50th Senate District, which comprises most of Onondaga County and parts of Cayuga County. He serves as the Deputy Majority Leader in the Senate, and recently, he's been publicly exploring a run for state governor in 2018. Senator DeFrancisco, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you for having me again.
Now, let me just start with a basic question. Why is a possible race for governor on your career and life radar screen right now?
Well, it's primarily because I think we're in a difficult situation in the state of New York, and there's going to have to be a change, whether it's me or someone else. I want to get out there and at least put my name for consideration by the Republican Party as a potential candidate. We lose congressional seats every 10 years at the redistricting and at the census because we don't gain as many people in our state as other states. Well, last year was a real red flag. We actually lost population, a net loss in population. Mm-hmm. So it's not a question of anybody spinning how wonderful the state of New York is and how great it is to live here. When you see people leaving and more people leaving than coming in, you know, people are voting with their feet, and that doesn't bode well. And the ones who leave are the ones who can leave. They have economic choices, and they feel it's better to be someplace else. And those that can't leave are the ones who need services. And those people that need services aren't going to have that tax base in order to provide those services. So it's, to me, a critical time in the state of New York's history.
So in terms of policies that we might pursue differently than to try to fix that or reverse that, what would be the single biggest impact of a Governor DeFrancisco to the policies of the state? And then the other piece of that question is, as a second part, also, what would be the impact of a Governor DeFrancisco to the way that Albany works, which is a related but a different question?
Well, first of all, with respect to policy, the economy is really the most important thing. People are leaving because they can't find jobs. Your relatives aren't coming back because there's no jobs. Your kids aren't here. Grandkids aren't here. And I think the reason is that the governor's philosophy on economic development is to provide hundreds of millions of dollars to a few programs, and he selects a few projects, and he selects those developers that he wants those projects to go to. And if you look at the Startup New York and some of the economic development programs that he started, and he's spending $50 million around the country to try to encourage people to come to the state of New York, the projected jobs are terrible. There's nowhere near the number of jobs that have been promised. And that's not the way to boost an economy. You've got to boost the economy at all levels. And to me, a better policy isn't to just select a few people who you think should get these hundreds of millions of dollars, but you've got to have across-the-board benefits, across-the-board lower taxes, less obligations on behalf of businesses rather than more obligations so that businesses actually can create jobs because they actually make a profit. And that's not a bad thing, although it seems that way for some of the more burdens that the state of New York has been providing. So that's, to me, the main policy issue that I think is got to be corrected.
Let me ask you one specific about that. You said the governor selects some industries or some individual corporations or investors to get these benefits. Is that the case, or my understanding is that there are these different boards, you know, these different commissions that make these decisions?
I'm a member of the Regional Economic Development Board, which is in Central New York. There's one. I think there's seven throughout the state. We don't select anything. We provide recommendation to the governor. The governor makes his decision as to how he wants to make the decision. We have a very small role in it. Perfect example, there's two projects in East Syracuse, my district. One of them is a film hub. The money was provided to build that film hub, and a developer was selected to actually operate it. And it was supposed to have films out of there about 2 years ago. and it's basically empty now. Things are starting to happen, but basically empty. Right next door is a LED lighting company that spent $90 million and is still empty, and there's still nothing to show for it. But the most important thing is the Regional Economic Development Council never discussed that $90 million project. Never discussed it. Mm-hmm. And what happens if the governor selects it, even without it being recommended? So it looks good. It looks like there's a group of people making these decisions, but it's truly not the case.
And what about the impact of a governor, DeFrancisco, on the way that Albany works? The last several governors that have run and won have all said, we got to change the way Albany works. And so what changes would you be wanting to make to that?
Well, I think the most important thing is a level of trust. I mean, as a legislator for many years and for the last 6 or 7 years under Governor Cuomo, he'll say one thing one day and one the other. You just cannot in any way rely on what he says. And I think you've got to have trust in order for three leaders to work together to get a common goal. His manner of doing business is, here's what I want to get done this year, and you're going to do it, or else we're going to do X, Y, and Z, or you won't get X, Y, and Z. That's not the way to do business. I know, obviously, I get along with John Flanagan and Carl Hasty, I know extremely well. I can get along with these people, and it would be a dialogue, not a mandated budget that has to be done his way or else. And I think that makes a big deal. As far as the corruption, you know, any business, any organization, there's corruption in it. And those people who have been found to be corrupt, many of whom are in jail. Some people, you can put any ethical standard, and it's never going to be adhered to. So you obviously got to enforce the laws that are in existence. And if the two leaders of the Senate and the Assembly are both facing jail time, obviously there's enough laws. The question is enforcing those laws.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Syracuse area State Senator John DeFrancisco. I had a question about your personal political style. Since you've been exploring this race for governor, a lot of other officials have been interviewed about their thoughts on you running, and they've offered many descriptions, and I'm just a couple of them. These are their words, by the way, not mine, but descriptions of you and your political style. Street fighter was one, and pit bull was another. Now, I have to say, based on my knowledge of you, that's not what comes to my mind. I would say happy warrior, perhaps, is the phrase. But to the point, how would you describe your own political style? What is the DeFrancisco style?
The DeFrancisco style is to be straight with people, tell what's on your mind. You don't tell one group one thing and another the other thing and hope that you're going to get some kind of trust relationship with other people. Some people think I'm overbearing, but I say what I think is right, and I do what I think is right. That's going to upset a lot of people that disagree with me. But you can always believe, and you know that what I say is what I truly feel and what I mean. So you can describe it any way you want. Pitbull doesn't bother me. it doesn't bother me at all. It's better than somebody who's bouncing around the fence until they can try to make you believe that you believe everything they believe in. And there's a perfect example. Stephanie Miner and I do not have much in common as far as political philosophy, but we get along. I trust her. She tells me what's on her mind, and she does what she thinks is right, and I do the same. And that, to me, that's the type of relationship that's important to have in government.
So back to the critique then of the current administration. You talked earlier about where you see the state going and why you're concerned about it. But to drill this down to really specific policies, what's been the single biggest policy impact that Andrew Cuomo as governor has made on the state?
Well, it's made the state the state is the benefactor for many businesses. It's the benefactor for many areas based upon what the governor thinks he who he wants to benefit. And I think you can't keep spending at the rate that he's spending. If there's $1 billion for Buffalo, the New York City LaGuardia is going to be corrected. We're going to do all these things with everything that's promised, and money is just, in my mind, it's used over and over again. He keeps saying that we're only increasing the budget by 2%, but oftentimes much of what's in the budget isn't spent till the following year, and then the uses change because that's not his priority at that point in time. You can't keep spending without raising taxes. Perfect example, the free college tuition. The amount of money that he claims is going to be used to make that college tuition free is just substantially underestimated. And it's not just what the tuition would have been. You're going to need more teachers. You're going to need more building. You're going to need more infrastructure. You just cannot justify what he claims it's going to cost, but based upon what his estimates are. That's a perfect example. And it affects the private colleges. I mean, you can't just give free tuition, and it's not free because there's many, many other expenses, and then not realize you're affecting something else. But how was that rolled out before the budget last year? A news conference with Bernie Sanders. Now, if that doesn't give you an idea what his true motives are, that was Bernie Sanders' position that seemed to be very favorable to many people when Bernie Sanders was running for president. So that's not the way government should run. And I can give you several other examples, but that's a perfect example.
Draw you out on that last comment then. You're suggesting that the governor's eye is on other things, running for president. Tell me why that's a problem for a state governor, in your view.
It's a problem because every decision is made based upon that goal, not what's best for the economy in the state of New York, or not what's best for New Yorkers. And I was with some people today, small businesses, indicating, actually, it was my ophthalmologist just before I came here, that he was basically saying how the paid family leave is going to kill him. The governor claims that the employee is going to be paying for it. That is not going to be the case. We underestimated that cost as well. But more importantly, what do I do, he asked me, when someone takes paid family leave and I can't find a replacement? Or when the employee comes back, then I've got to fire the replacement and then they're on unemployment and my unemployment compensation goes up. You know, it seems to me there's a lack of, in my mind, a true economic analysis of the cost of various benefits and the effects of those benefits on the businesses that are leaving the state of New York. And why paid family leave? Why an increase till $15 an hour minimum wage, free college tuition? That's his platform for that next step. And to me, it's very destructive to the residents of the state of New York.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with State Senator John DeFrancisco, who represents the 50th District in New York State. You've been in the Senate almost 25 years, and you've worked your way up and held several positions of significance in that institution. That's important for your influence in the institution. It's important for your influence on state government, and it's also important for the influence and the interest of the Syracuse area. So, you know, you'd have to give that up in order just to run for this. And in a sense, this area would be giving that up in order for you to run. So the possible gain, on the other hand, again, thinking about it in these terms, you know, for you in the area is going to be enormous. But can you just think through that process with me? How do you weigh the trade-offs of thinking about that decision? Because there's a lot involved there.
Well, I've actually been in elective office in Central New York 15 years at the local level, school board, city council, president of the city council, and 25 almost at the Senate. Now, that's a long time. I'm in good shape, good health, but I'm not going to be effective forever, okay? And at some point, I'm going to have to leave. It just seems to me I want to get around the state of New York, offer what I think I can give to the state of New York. If the Republican Party chooses somebody else, so be it. I will be helping whomever the Republican candidate is because I think it's so important with the state of New York. In the event I continue to run for governor, win or lose, there'd have to be someone else running in my position. But there are many individuals in the state of New York that could take over for what I do in the state Senate. It may take some time to get the seniority, but the same thing happened when my predecessor, Tarki Lombardi, was in the Senate for a long period of time, and he was the finance chair when he ended up leaving. And I started out as chairman of veterans. It took time, but eventually you got that influence back again. But, you know, I got to look at it, what the best thing I think I can do. And if the Republican Party in selecting their candidate doesn't think I'm the guy, that's fine. Then I'll make the decision what else I do, if anything.
Do you have some kind of target date by which you're going to figure this out?
Yeah, I've been going around the state for the last couple of months, and I've hit 8 counties, and I've got 7 already scheduled for the next month and a half. And then I'm going to try to fit as many more as I can before the end of the year. The Republican convention is in May. We don't know where it's going to be in the state yet, but it's in May. And at that period, by the end of the year, the beginning of the next year, I'll have a pretty good idea whether there's any interest in my candidacy, and then I'll make a final decision well before I'd have to make a decision whether I was going to run again for the Senate.
If you just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guest is State Senator John DeFrancisco. Now, thinking about how this race might play out if you were the nominee, I've heard it said by many political observers that if you look at the demographics and the political culture of the state, it's now become virtually impossible for an upstater, let alone a Republican upstater, to win the governor's office. So what would be the path to an electoral victory that you would see for an upstate Republican? How's that going
to
work?
Well, first of all, as to the likelihood, I agree with you. It's not easy. But I liken this coming year to the year that's George Pataki ran for governor against another Cuomo, Mario Cuomo. No one in their right mind thought that they didn't know what a George Pataki was upstate, okay, at least in our neck of the woods. He was from Peekskill. But there was such a dissatisfaction with Mario Cuomo, who also was being considered or thought of as a potential presidential candidate, that it was almost like anybody but Cuomo. And it was not an easy race. I think he won by a couple hundred thousand votes statewide, but he won huge upstate, and he won huge in the suburbs, which counteracted the what goes on in New York City, which is almost a straight Democrat vote in most of the boroughs, 4 of the 5 anyway. So you'd have to have that, what I believe, the same dissatisfaction that you had when George Pataki ran, and nobody knew who he was. So I think that's very similar to what it was back then, and that was 23 years ago, I think, when he won. So that's the possibility. And also in New York City, the dissatisfaction isn't just upstate. About a couple months ago, the 7th Avenue subway was completed, and that's been going on forever. The governor went down there and was preening before the cameras, and as if he had dug the hole and laid the tracks for the 7th Avenue subway, and how he did such a wonderful job. A couple months later, the subways, the summer of hell in the subways. Trains were going off the tracks, fires happening in the subway tunnels, air conditioning breaking, and he blamed de Blasio. He said, de Blasio's got to do more, and it's his situation. But the governor appoints the chairman of the MTA and some other board members. So, you know, that doesn't bode well for him, even in his area where he's most likely to get a strong vote. So, and there's the battle between him and de Blasio as to who's further to the left. There's no love between the mayor of the city of New York and the governor. So there's a lot of different things. And lastly, when you see people to the left of Cuomo, like Stephanie Miner, Cynthia Nixon, others are talking about running a primary from the left against him. So that dissatisfaction is there. What level will it be next year? I don't know, but it's doable as far as I'm concerned if it's a strong candidate on the Republican side.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the last point that you made, because I was thinking of another name you didn't mention, but Zephyr Teachout, when she challenged Andrew Cuomo for the nomination from the left. And she seemed to get most of her traction upstate, and I didn't know how that would translate to the formula for an upstate Republican. I don't know. It seems like almost would bode ill for the prospects if he's getting that much if he's losing that much support from the left side.
Well, the difference is that was the working families party that she was running on, and she almost, I think she had a good showing. She didn't almost beat him, but she had a good showing, and that is the people that are more of the progressive side of the political spectrum. And it wasn't a Democrat primary. It was a Working Family Party's primary. So I would think that the people upstate generally are not favorable to Cuomo. And that segment of the political spectrum, the progressives, chose her as opposed to him. That's why it was a much closer race than anybody expected.
I've just got a couple minutes at the end. I wanted to change topics now. And ask you this. I have read recently that Matt Driscoll is leaving as commissioner of the State Transportation Department, and he'll be now the executive director of the State Thruway. He was going to be, at least my understanding, instrumental in the decision on I-81, and you've been an advocate of the tunnel option. So my question for you is where do you see that standing at present? What's your guess of the likely outcome? Does the change in position of Matt Driscoll have any effect on this?
First of all, I'm an advocate for the hybrid solution, namely the community grid, but with a thruway through the middle of the city, underground for about a mile, 1.2 miles.
Hybrid tunnel, sorry.
Tunnel. Everybody keeps talking about tunnel. The newspaper is wonderful about just talking the tunnel option. But so that's number one.
Okay.
Number two, there is now going to be the third transportation commissioner since we started talking about this about 5 or 6 years ago. Driscoll replaced, now I even forgot her name, and then now there's going to be another person taking over. I kidded him at the state fair for the ribbon cutting. I said, "You got out just in time." And I was really hoping that he would be there because he has some vested interest in his hometown, and he would look at these options objectively. So I think that, once again, whoever's there, the governor's going to make the decision, and someone else is just going to have to provide that information to the public and take the heat one way or the other. So in the long run, I don't think it's going to matter a heck of a lot.
If you were betting, what would be the outcome that you think we're going to get?
I would bet for the hybrid option if these people, the governor finally agreed to do that extra study about the cost of that, because that's the most sensible way to keep traffic moving and get rid of the viaducts. But nobody knows what that report's going to say. A similar thing that's being held up, and that's the inland port. Remember, we're waiting for that for the transportation department. So a lot of things are being held up, and unfortunately, it would have been best, I think, for Central New York if Matt stayed in that position.
That was State Senator John DeFrancisco. Senator, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me again.
Well, thank you for having me on.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, conversations in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations, conversations in the public interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.